07 of Plainfield, New Jersey.
Welcome to InsessionFilm.com's first ever podcast. I am JD Duran, and to my left is the awesome Nate Parsons. To my right is the more awesome Matthew Mason. Fellas, how you guys doing?
Doing awesome.
All right, Nate, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about yourself?
All right. Hey, guys. My name is Nate Parsons. I've been a big movie lover all my life, but I didn't really start getting invested in them until I was about 17 or 18. That's when I started venturing into different genres, and I started watching some of the classics. Some of my all-time favorite movies are The Shawshank Redemption, Braveheart, Schindler's List, and A Beautiful Mind.
Sup, sports fans. This is Matthew Mason here. I'm an inveterate film watcher, raised on a very healthy diet of action movies, chick flicks, musicals, and Disney movies, and found I had quite a taste for film in the eighth grade when a friend of mine introduced me to the Criterion Collection. Just fell in love with movies after that, and I've watched pretty much everything from 1900 until 2012, and certainly seeing a lot of the new ones this year. My favorite movies include Blazing Saddles, Cinema Paradiso, The Royal Tenenbaums, Casablanca, and Die Hard. And I mean the real Die Hard, not the new thing that they call Die Hard.
And my name is J.D. Duran. And like these guys, I've been a huge movie fan for a very long time and have really been into it, like Nate, since high school, I guess. And some of my favorites include The Shawshank Redemption. Top Gun is a favorite of mine also, and even the Transformer series. I was a really big fan as a kid with the cartoon, and I enjoy giant robots killing each other. I know they're not great movies by any means, but I had fun with them anyway. And as you could tell from the opening sequence, today we are going to be reviewing A Good Day to Die Hard, which is the full review is up on the website right now at InsessionFilm.com. And when we went to see it the other night, we knew we had to start these podcasts sooner rather than later because we had a lot to say about it. So with no further ado, we're going to go ahead and jump right into this. And I know you had a lot of thoughts, Matthew. What'd you think about A Good Day to Die Hard?
I kind of wish that's what was happening to me while I was watching the film. It was a pretty good day to just not go and watch that movie. The problem, one of the major problems with the film, is one, it just doesn't have the heart of a Die Hard film, albeit it has Bruce Willis, and it's even Bruce Willis sans hair, which is, you know, makes him better. The balder he is, the cooler he is. But I don't know, it didn't feel like it. I mean, it had still terrorist plot, still had nothing to do with, Die Hard. It's kind of like this movie just existed, and you could have called it basically anything. And they just slapped the title Die Hard on there. The music was actually pretty good in it. The only problem was it didn't fit it. It one, didn't really preserve any of the old sounds, the really epic feeling of the Die Hard scores up to that point. But it was good. It just did not mesh with anything.
To kind of further that point, too, like in the review that I did for the website, I agree with you. I thought Marco Beltrami's score was actually pretty good on its own, but it really didn't fit the movie very well. Like it seemed to kind of really – it made the movie feel like it was taking itself way too serious, and it just didn't fit it like it really did the other movies. Nate, what did you think of A Good Day to Die Hard?
Well, I thought it would have been a good day to stay inside, save my money, and watch the original Die Hard. Because this movie was awful. I think the biggest problem for me with the new Die Hard was it was just plain boring. It wasn't fun. It wasn't entertaining. I mean, the movie is only an hour and a half long, and yet it felt like I was watching some miniseries on HBO. Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Matthew and JD both said about it, and I think it suffers the same problem that all the other Die Hard sequels do, and that is, they stray away from what made the original so awesome. And that was that, I mean, the original, they focused more on the characters first before they got to all the action. And it was somewhat grounded in reality. The villain was amazing. And, I mean, it was just, I mean, there's a reason why it's a classic now.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I had with this movie was the script. I mean, I'm not sure what you guys felt about it, but the playwright was done by Skip Woods, and I don't know how familiar you guys are with him, but everything he writes turns to garbage. He was the same writer that did X-Men Origins Wolverine, and if you've seen that, that is by far the worst of the X-Men movies. It is absolutely a tragedy. And everything he just does is just awful, and this is really no exception. And this was one of the main things going into it that I was really worried about, especially with what I was reading online. The basic premise of it I thought was okay, but what he does with this script is he just goes crazy with it and just ways that are just in the first 5 minutes he throws any sort of realism and credibility just goes right out the window. And even for Die Hard, I mean, there's a part of that that is part of the franchise where it's not really based on realism necessarily, but this is even over the top, I think, for even the Die Hard franchise. And the direction of this movie wasn't really a whole lot better either, which was done by John Moore, who I actually like some of his stuff. I really liked Behind Enemy Lines, which was really good, but he also did Max Payne, which I thought was awful. So, there is some really, I don't know, there's some things about it that I liked with it, and there's some other ones that I don't, but what are your guys' take on it?
One of the best line of script holds is yippee-ki-yay, mother expletive. And that's the thing that I'm looking forward to, and that's the best line, and that's still not even exciting. That was just kind of sad. So
yeah, and some of the one-liners were just flat-out cheesy. I mean, there's really nothing more to say than that, but
yeah, I mean, it's hard to really get into details without really putting in spoilers here, but I mean, there are some lines in this, and again, going back to the script was just not well written, and you know, I kind of feel bad for Bruce Willis, who's done a pretty good job with this series overall, and I think you guys would agree with that, and it's when he's having to deliver these lines, I can only imagine in his mind he's even gone, I can't believe I'm having to say this. But I think he brings back McClane as typical as you would think he does. And I think he delivers the lines pretty well. I think it's just what was written down, what he has to say in this movie is just really poorly written and just not really well done at all. So, I mean, I think you guys are agreeing with me. I mean, the biggest part of this was just a really poorly done script. What did you guys think of the performances between Willis and Courtney in this movie?
Bruce Willis has always been a favorite, but to look at him in this, it just felt like a real offshoot. Honestly, his performance in The Expendables was even more memorable than his rehashing of John McClane here. And then Courtney is just honestly forgettable. I had kind of forgotten his name until JD had just said it. So their interaction, I did not buy they were father and son. I just bought that they were two men who really didn't really enjoy working with each other.
Yeah, to me it just kind of felt like they were going through the motions. Just reading the words off the page with no emotion, nothing.
Yeah, there really wasn't anything to provoke any emotion in this movie. I don't know what you guys were feeling, but as I'm watching it, as things are unfolding in this film, I'm just sitting there going, you've got to be kidding me. There's no way this is about to happen. No way. And it gets so predictable. You're like, I know where it's going. Like, I mean, kind of, and I think that's part of what makes it boring, kind of like what you were saying. It's really terrible. I do disagree with you a little bit. I thought Courtney's performance was okay. I didn't think it was necessarily the worst thing. I liked him way better than the quote-unquote bad guys in this movie. I thought those were way over the top and took themselves way too seriously considering how bad they really were. Overall, on the website, I gave this movie a C-. I personally think it was worse than that, but I have much respect for the franchise, and so really on the name alone, that's why it got a C- for me. It could have been worse. What were your guys' overall grades for this?
Out of respect for the Die Hard franchise, I give it a D-.
Yeah, I'm about right there too. D-.
All right. Well, what was something that you would take away as a positive from this movie? I know that's a really tough question, and you guys may have a hard time with this, but I want you to really think hard and try to take something positive away from this. And I'll go first. I think the one positive thing I will take away from this is the fact that while it wasn't executed very well, I liked the idea of the relationship between McClane and his son. I think the message itself is good. It was just poorly executed. I like the messages of you know, fathers and sons and reuniting, and the whole idea of what that means, I think, is a really great topic. And there are some really great movies out there that I think go with that sort of theme, you know, or even going back to this last year with Beasts of the Southern Wild, with, you know, father-daughter type thing. So, which we'll talk a little bit more about that next week with our Oscars podcast, which you can really look forward to. We're going to have a lot of fun with that one. That's the one thing I would take away from this as a positive. It wasn't executed well, but at least there was a little bit something that I took away from that as going, you know, that wasn't the worst thing in the whole world.
Positives from A Good Day to Die Hard.
I know there's not a whole lot.
The visuals on the action scenes were very slick, like some of the slow motion. But other than that, I really didn't like anything in this movie. I guess another positive would be that it can only go up after this. The series can only go up.
Yeah, Nader stole my thunder there. Die Hard 5 taught me there's no way Die Hard 6 can be this bad.
Man, you guys really hated this movie. and it really isn't that great. It really isn't that great. And there's lots of things going on in this movie. If you haven't seen it, A Good Day to Die Hard is not necessarily the greatest movie in the whole world. And it's definitely the worst of the franchise by any means. So that being said, I was going to get into this a little bit later with some of the other stuff that we're going to do during the podcast. But earlier this week, Bruce Willis did announce that there will be another Die Hard. So based off of what we see here, and I know you guys aren't very excited, but what do you think about Willis announcing that there's going to be another Die Hard? I mean, does that make you guys more excited? You guys more frustrated? You just want it to be done? What do you think, Matthew?
As long as he doesn't pull a Police Academy Mission to Moscow, yeah, I'm excited.
I mean, yeah, it's Die Hard. I'll go see it.
So we'll probably go see it, and obviously we'll have it up on the website when that comes. So we are going to move on to the next segment here in just a little bit, and how the rest of this podcast is going to go. Later on in the show, we are going to be doing some top news, which is what we're going to do next and talk about that. There's some exciting stuff we put up on the website earlier this week that we're excited to get to talk about. There's some new trailers and some that came out a couple weeks ago that we wanted to go over that we're really excited about. And then we're going to finish up the show with the Oscars. Since the Oscars are coming up here next weekend, we are going to talk about our favorite Oscar snubs of all time, in which there's quite a few. So that's going to, you know, wound up the show. So, but before we get into the top news, I just want to point out again that you can read our full review of the Oscars, or of the Oscars. You can read our full review of A Good Day to Die Hard on the website. That's InSessionFilm.com. Also, feel free to follow us on Twitter at InSessionFilm. And you can find us on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and search InSessionFilm. This podcast is also brought to you by Phoenix Blue Marketing and Advertising. You can follow them at Phoenix Blue. Get all your social media and web solutions at phoenixblue.com. Follow them on Twitter at @PHX_blue. And you can also search them on Facebook for Phoenix Blue. So we're going to get into our next segment, which is going to be the top news. And there's a lot of news to talk about. The first thing that we're going to talk about is Jennifer Lawrence is going to team up again with David O. Russell for a title that we really can't repeat on air. It's American Expletive. And we'll leave it at that. And I think they're looking for another title. But what do you guys think about Jennifer Lawrence teaming up with David O. Russell again?
Honestly, not very excited about it. David O. Russell is one of my least favorite directors ever, who's actually received notoriety, except minus The Fighter. But then again, he didn't write that. And then Jennifer Lawrence, outside of The Hunger Games, has not been a very exciting actress to me. So I'll pass the mic.
As long as the story is good, I mean, I'm okay with it. I really like Jennifer Lawrence. I think she's a very good actress. David O. Russell, he's made some fine films. So, yeah, I guess if the story is okay, you know, I think it'll be a good team.
Going back to what you were saying, Matthew, I do agree and sort of disagree with you a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of films from David O. Russell that I really don't enjoy either, but The Fighter was really good, and I really enjoyed Silver Linings Playbook. It was a fantastic film and definitely one of my favorites from last year. I definitely think it deserves the nominations that it got from the Academy. And again, that's something that we'll talk about next week as well. But I did enjoy Jennifer Lawrence in that film also. So if they can take that magic from that movie and bring it into this project, I'll be pretty excited for it.
And I will freely admit I have not seen Silver Linings Playbook, so I'm willing to have my mind changed. I'm just basing it off of what I do currently know.
Absolutely. Nate, I'm actually going to let you take this next one. There was a story that came out about... some new X-Men casting that I think you can talk to us about.
Yeah, Peter Dinklage. He's best known for his role in Game of Thrones on HBO. It was just announced that he will be joining the cast of X-Men Days of Future Past, which will be directed by Bryan Singer, who directed the very first two X-Men movies before Brett Ratner destroyed it. And we also know that he will be playing the main villain. Who that is, we don't know yet. It's speculated that he may be playing the creator of the Sentinels, which are the mutant hunting robots, which, if that's true, that would be awesome. And I don't know about you guys, but I loved X-Men First Class, and I can't wait for this movie next summer. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm very excited for this movie too. I think there's going to be some new stuff in this that I'm really excited about. And speaking of Jennifer Lawrence, she'll be reprising her role as Mystique in this movie. So man, she's really blown up over the last year. So I'm really excited for this. I thought the First Class was amazing. It was just done really, really well. The score for that movie is actually one of my favorites of all time. Henry Jackman is definitely a name in Hollywood that you guys need to get familiar with, because I think he's going to do some really great stuff. He's fairly new, but he's done some amazing work, and we'll talk about that more next week. But he also did the score for Wreck-It Ralph, which was one of my favorites from last year too. There's lots about this particular movie that I'm really excited about. Matthew, what you think?
Yeah, it looks like X-Men's going to take a trend upwards. Fans were incredibly disappointed, including myself, with X-Men's origins. I mean, previously with X3, the first two films were very solid. And then to look at, like, oh, okay, this film series is being redeemed when you have a superhero movie that transcends the superhero genre like many others have in the past, you know, 10 years or so, including the Dark Knight trilogy. It actually gets me excited to see this is in an upward trend. And with someone with the caliber of Dinklage joining the cast, it makes me very hopeful.
I mean, the cast for this movie is shaping up to be pretty awesome. I mean, not only do you have the First Class actors like Michael Fassbender and Jennifer Lawrence, like JD said, and James McAvoy returning, but we also have some of the actors from the original trilogy returning as well, like Hugh Jackman, Ian McKellen.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point. As I'm actually looking at the cast right now on IMDb, and it's really cool how they are kind of mixing and matching that. And even though the third one, like you guys were saying, was not great at all, they are bringing some of those characters back. They're also bringing back Ellen Page's character, who I enjoy her as an actress. I think she's really great, so, and she'll be coming back. So her her character necessarily wasn't the greatest, but it is kind of neat seeing how they're transferring all of that kind of back into all of this. So it's kind of a neat idea. The next topic that we wanted to talk about is something that I know you guys will have lots of opinions on, and As I'm sure all of you are aware of right now, there's tons of Star Wars news going out right now. And it's really getting hyped up a lot. Disney is doing all kinds of crazy things right now, and they are unleashing rumors and stories like it's nobody's business. Some of the things that we wanted to get into is Harrison Ford has announced that he is coming back as Han Solo, which should be an interesting thing. So, and I know you guys got some opinions on this. So, Nate, what do you think about this? Good idea, bad idea? What do you think?
I guess it depends on how he's used in the new movie. But as a huge Star Wars fan, especially Han Solo, I'm actually really looking forward to it. But I'm just worried that his return as Indiana Jones wasn't that great. So I'm a little worried how his return as Han Solo is going to go. What do you think, Matthew?
One, I liked Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I know you'll hate me, but I liked it. Actually, I'm very excited to see Harrison Ford coming back. With J.J. Abrams at the helm and George Lucas kicked to the curb, albeit, yeah, I love George Lucas in theory, but not in practice. I'm very excited to see him back, even if he was frozen in carbonite the entire film. I mean, he'd still make it better.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they'll use him and see what they do. But I'm for one, excited for it. They also announced that they were going to be doing some other solo films, including Boba Fett and Yoda, which should be really interesting to see how they do. Now, the Star Wars franchise has really done a pretty good job of keeping Yoda's past kind of secret. It's very mysterious. There's not really much known about his past, which is pretty interesting. And so now that they're looking to do a whole Yoda film, I wonder how much of that they're really going to start to unleash. Is that something that you're going to see? I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think they'll keep it sort of mysterious? Or do you think they'll really do a whole backstory?
Can one ever truly understand Yoda? I mean, I'd certainly love to see it delving into a guy who's, supposed to be 800 years old. I mean, I would love to see that. But, I mean, how much can you cover in a 2.5-3-hour film? So I'm sure they'll reveal some, but come on, can't show all the tricks.
I'm looking forward to the Yoda standalone movie, but I think I'm really looking forward to the Boba Fett standalone movie. He's one of my favorite characters in the Star Wars series, but he really wasn't in a whole lot, and I would just love to see a whole movie based around him. I think that can make for an awesome movie.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was kind of interesting. I was listening to some other podcasts and stuff this week, and that's more or less what a lot of them were saying also is, you know, he's not really in it a ton, but he is a big fan favorite. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they do with all that. But the whole, you know, the story with his dad and the whole Clone Wars and stuff wasn't really highly received either. So it'll be really interesting to see how they incorporate that story, but because he is a big fan favorite, I do think a lot of people will still go see it. But it'll be interesting to see how well it does. Going back to the Yoda film again, Frank Oz has also said that he would voice Yoda. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Good idea?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. You can't do a Yoda movie without him as a voice.
It'd be like the wrong-sounding Muppets that resulted after Jim Henson dying, so yeah, we need Frank Oz.
Well, there you have it. I think that's pretty unanimous from our perspective. If you guys have any thoughts about this, also feel free to email us. You can email us at info@incessionfilm.com. And we'd love to get your feedback. So you can also tweet us at @incessionfilm, go to our Facebook page and leave us some comments. We'd love to know what your guys' thoughts are on this also. So there's lots of buzz going on about this. It should be pretty interesting to see what happens too. One other quick thing that I wanted to get into, actually there's two other things before we move on, is something that's personal to me, is one of my favorite things about film is the music. I love how they incorporate either, you know, songs or original scores into the movies is really a big thing for me. That being said, last night, Les Mis and Brave won a ton of awards at the Cinema Audio Society Awards, and they did really, really well. So I just wanted to get your guys' feedback on not necessarily the awards, but do you think it was deserving? I personally loved Brave's score. I thought Patrick Doyle did a fantastic job with the score and the music in that. Obviously, Les Mis is definitely one of my favorite films from last year. And obviously, as a musical, there's tons of music in it. So what did you guys think? Pretty deserving. They probably won't win tons of Oscars necessarily. Brave might win for animated, but we'll get into that next week. But I just want to see what you guys thought of the music from these films.
Yeah, I mean, as far as audio goes for Brave, the music did make a lot of that movie. It really added to the feel of, you know, putting us in Scotland. Just really, you know, making almost transcend what would have normally felt just like a run-of-the-mill Disney film, albeit I know it's Pixar, but still. It really did add to it, as well as just other audio aspects of the film, just like sounds in the woods, just the, you know, characters, just the way it was recorded was actually just, I don't know, quite stunning to me. And then looking at Les Mis, albeit I've not seen it, but just what I know about the way the recording process, the fact that they actually recorded the singing while actually filming rather than tracking in the voices is just impressive. And the fact that it has been received as well as it has, from my understanding, in critic circles, that's fantastic. So I do believe the accolades were both deserved for both films.
Yeah, for me, Les Mis, while I didn't think it was the best movie of the year, I don't think it's deserving of a Best Picture nom. I still got to give it props for doing all the musical numbers live, which is basically the whole movie. I mean, there's very little actual dialogue in the movie. So, yeah, I think on that front, I think it definitely deserves some awards for just taking that huge risk and doing it all live.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I mean, I, as someone who has done some live production stuff before, it's not very easy to pull that stuff off. And to be able to shoot a whole movie live on set like that, I'm sure was very tricky and took a lot of work. So, you know, kudos to that crew for being able to do that and pull off, you know, quite the performance they did with that. So, you know, and I agree with all you guys on that point. That was really, really well done. The last thing for the top news that I wanted to go over is an interesting strategy done by the Mummy reboot. And I don't know how much you guys know about this. There is a Mummy reboot that is being done right now, and it already has a writer. It is the same writer that did Prometheus last year. But what they have done is they have hired Billy Ray, who wrote The Hunger Games and State of Play. And what he is doing is he's writing a separate competing script in order to get the project going. The studios are basically wanting to get this project moving really, really quickly, because it has a release date for next year. So they're wanting to get the script finished and finalized and to really get shooting underway and to get things going. So Universal basically is hiring another writer to come out and compete with the script they already have for this. So, which is an interesting strategy. It hasn't been done a ton, but it has been done a few other times. What do you guys think about this? Is this a good idea to bring in another writer in order to, you know, compete with what you already have to try to make it better? Is that something that you would be offended of if you're the writer? I mean, that's, you know, they hired you to write this movie and now they're bringing in someone else because they may or may not like your stuff. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Albeit I love to respect the idea of artistic integrity when it comes to writing, and that is something that I do really respect in film. I love that. Ultimately, still the film industry, especially when it comes to a picture like The Mummy, is about making money. And fact that Universal is employing a free market system here is pretty good. I mean, it just drives up the quality of the script when they're having more people putting in bids for it. So actually, I'm believing, as a, you know, consumer of this film, when it gets released, I'm going to get a better quality this way. And honestly, because I mean, as far as artistic integrity goes, it's The Mummy.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I agree with most of what Matthew just said. I guess I don't know exactly why they need to write competing scripts. Why can't the one guy look over the script that's already written and try to improve it? I think that's usually what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point. You know, I think, you know, one way that I put it on the article for the website is, you know, like if you're a sports fan, like particularly a football fan, like sometimes you'll see NFL teams bring in other quarterbacks, like other competing quarterbacks that are pretty good, you know, to either motivate or have some sort of quarterback controversy, you know, change things up, you know, that where it may not be going well or the way that you think it should be. You know, that happens all the time in the NFL. So that's kind of, you know, I think the Hollywood translation of this is basically, hey, let's bring in another writer that we think is a good and can either help this script out and, or help get things moving. And I think that's their main thing, is they really want to get things in forward motion so that way they can get this movie out by its release date next year. So it's an interesting strategy. I mean, we'll definitely see what happens. So moving on, we are going to be talking about some trailers that had just come out, and we'll probably talk about a couple that you know, were released in the last couple weeks. But since this is our first podcast, we're going to go ahead and do that. The first one I want to talk about is this Imagine You at Monsters University. This is such a unique and different trailer, but I think it fits perfectly with this series. And we actually have a video for it, so we're gonna go ahead and play the video for it right now.
Imagine an education where extraordinary comes standard, and the power that drives us can't be contained. Where those who embrace their history become those who create it. Imagine a university.
Where I can be unique.
In a family of thousands.
Where I can love to learn.
And learn what I love.
Your future is knocking. Open the door. Monsters University.
Man, I don't know about you guys, but I personally love this trailer. I think it's a really, really fun trailer, and it's kind of funny because, you know, it plays off a lot of the, you know, university ads that you see on TV, especially during college sporting events and different things like that. So it's really unique. I don't know. What'd you guys think about this trailer?
I really love it. I think it's a great way to tease a movie. I know I would definitely enroll if I was a monster, but unfortunately I'm not.
I don't know about Nate not being a monster, but still. Yeah, I do really enjoy it. It did catch me a little off guard, albeit it does seem a little contrived. I enjoy it quite a bit. I'm a big fan of puns, so the eyes made me laugh. Monsters, Inc. was not one of my favorite Pixar films, but I do remember quite enjoying it. Saw it when I was in junior high, I think. So, I mean, I'm excited to see what they can do with it. Yeah, it was just kind of a fun way to tease it, just like Nate said.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. And I don't know, Nate, you might want to enroll. They may be taking humans. You never know. Very good trailer, though. Check it out if you haven't. It's up on our website at incessionfilm.com. And the next one we're going to be talking about is Oblivion, starring Tom Cruise. That is coming out April 19th. Has a new trailer that just came out, and if you haven't seen this, go check it out. It is really, really awesome, and it makes me very excited for this. Nate, I know you have some thoughts.
I love the first trailer, and I love the second trailer even more. I love the imagery, the visuals. I'm really looking forward to this movie because the soundtrack is done by, the score actually is done by a band called M83.
What?
Which they are amazing, so I'm really looking forward to see what they come up with. The only thing I'm worried about with this movie is that there's obviously some kind of twist. I don't know, I feel like that's really going to make or break it, depending on what that twist is. What do you think, Matthew?
This is a film I was somewhat excited for when I saw the first trailer. I mean, it looked cool. I'm actually quite a big Tom Cruise fan, at least in the movie realm, in his real life, not so much. So I got excited when I saw it, but just kind of like, I'll hold myself at bay. I don't want to, you know, overextend my joy there. And I decided, you know, I'll watch this. And then M83 doing the score, that made me pretty freaking happy. But to see the second trailer, which expands so much more on what this movie's actually going to look like and more be about, that kind of blew my mind. And I'm actually really cannot wait for what is March or April this is coming out.
I'm really interested to see how it's going to play out. Like you were saying, Nate, there could be some sort of twist to it. And there's a lot of ambiguity in the trailer, which is really kind of interesting because, I mean, I think they do a great job of setting up the scenery. And, you know that it's like an after Earth type feel to it. And there's not much going on the actual planet itself. And then out of nowhere, Morgan Freeman shows up, which is really... Which, yeah, exactly. So, should be pretty interesting. It's directed by Joseph Kaczynski, who also did Tron Legacy. And I'm pretty in the middle, I think, for Tron. I actually kind of enjoyed it for the most part. I know it didn't get great reviews and it didn't do well in the box office necessarily, but I really enjoyed it. And I loved the score from Tron, which was done by Daft Punk, who's also not a traditional composer also. So it seems like he's the kind of director that doesn't really like to do that and likes to go in different direction. Like you're saying, Nate, with M83 being the composers for this film, that's going to be something to really look forward to. So... which should be really interesting. So definitely go check out Oblivion. It's going to be some good stuff. The next trailer that we want to talk about is a movie called Now You See Me. This is a movie that you may or may not have heard of yet. There hasn't been tons of marketing for it yet, but there is a trailer out for it that you need to go check out. And it's very, very interesting. It's got a great cast. And Nate, I know this is something you're really excited about. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about Now You See Me?
Well, I saw the trailer for Now You See Me yesterday before I saw Warm Bodies, which you can read the review for Warm Bodies on our website at insessionfilm.com. But Now You See Me, that was the first time I've even heard of it, was yesterday. And it appears from the trailer that it is about a group of magicians who steal money, pretty much. And there seems to be some sort of futuristic, scientific vibe to it, because they can teleport and do things that you shouldn't be able to normally do. And then Mark Ruffalo, it has a great cast. Mark Ruffalo, Jesse Eisenberg, Isla Fisher, Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, Woody Harrelson. So, I mean, yeah, I was pretty pumped once I saw it yesterday, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I was taken off guard when I first watched the trailer. It reminds me a little bit of The Prestige, but a happier version of that, if you know it's possible. But yeah, I was just really excited. The casting looks amazing. The plot, and there's the fact that I'm really in the dark about exactly what's going on in the film, makes me want to watch it more. So I'm very much looking forward to this. So I will be seeing Now You See Me.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting. I'm pretty excited for it too. And like you were saying, Nate, it's got a phenomenal cast. And when you watch the trailer, I mean, you're sitting there thinking, man, this doesn't look like it just has a good cast, but their performances are spot on. Like, just from watching the trailer, like, this is going to be really, really well done. If you go to IMDb, the synopsis is FBI agents track a team of illusionists who pull off bank heists during the performances and reward their audiences with the money. And when you watch the trailer, you're really blown away by how they do it and how they pull it off. It looks like it's going to be really, really good. Excuse me. And it's done by the same director that did the Incredible Hulk movie, which I really enjoyed. I thought it was actually one of my favorite ones of Marvel's first phase of their Avengers initiative. So the next one that I want to talk about is Fast and the Furious 6. And this movie, I feel like you're either going to hate it or you're going to love it. But it looks like it's going off of the same theme in the last one, where it's not really about car races necessarily, but, you know, them teaming up with The Rock's character, who is, you know, in the army and part of the government and trying to take down the bad guys. So it looks like it's along that same kind of theory. This trailer has lots going on in it. So what do you guys think? Matthew, I know you have lots of thoughts.
Yeah, I saw the first Fast and Furious years ago and thought, that was an okay movie. It was enjoyable. Cool cars. And then I saw Fast 5 pretty much as a joke, just because I needed something to go watch one day. and I fell in love with it because I love the bank heist idea mixed in with cars. So I am super excited for Fast and Furious 6 that's picking up on the same idea there. I love the integration of all the characters from previous films. Really just tying a lot of things together, hopefully tying up some loose ends from the previous films. And I'm just excited, like, oh dang, towards the end of the trailer when all the cars are like taken down, what looks kind of like a, I don't even know, like a aircraft carrier, if that's, I don't know, it's like a plane that carries planes, and like taking that down and just going into a fiery mess. I'm just kind of excited right now.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited too. I hated the first four Fast and the Furious movies with a passion. I don't like them. I never want to see them again. But Fast 5 was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I was actually really surprised that I enjoyed it. And I still think the scene in that where the two guys in the two cars are carrying that bank safe around on the highway is awesome. I really enjoyed that. I think I watched that like five times. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's got pretty much the same cast, too. All those guys are back. Plus, I know you guys didn't like the original ones, but they're bringing back Michelle Rodriguez's character into this also, which, you know, they teased it in the credits of the last one. So we're still not sure what her backstory is, and they don't really reveal a whole lot in the trailer other than she's back, which you know she was going to be based off of the teaser in the last film. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that's going to be a big part of this movie, and how is that going to affect what they're doing now, which is obviously way different than when she was in the films?
It looks like Letty might be a fair amount of the focus of the film. I'm just wondering in terms of screen credit for The Rock and Vin Diesel, like how much of that film will actually be invested in them and then the other supporting cast, and that, you know, Michelle Rodriguez actually gets her due. But it does look like a fair amount of the film will actually be dedicated to her character, which I'm excited about because she was an interesting character in the earlier films, and especially with the supposed death she had in the fourth film. So I'm very excited to see her back, and I think it'll be a kind of a vital plot point.
It appears to me that she's the love interest of the main villain, I guess you'd say. Eventually, she's probably going to turn and help out the good guys, you know, because that's usually how it happens. So I wouldn't say I'm excited for her presence, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it should be pretty interesting. So I'm excited for it. I think overall I'm pretty excited. I kind of can't wait to see it. So we're going to move on to our next segment, which is something I know that we have talked about a lot. Now, we were thinking about doing this next week with our Oscars show that we're going to have, but and when we were talking about it originally, we got into this whole conversation about this, you know, toward the end of that, and we're like, well, why don't we just throw it into our first week show instead? And we are going to be giving our favorite Oscar snubs, movies or actors or anything of that we think should have gotten more praise from the Academy than what they did. So what we're going to do is we're each going to give like our top three or four and kind of discuss those. So Nate, why don't you go first and give us your, I know this is something, a little bit of a sore subject for you. I know you got a lot on this. So let me know, what are your top Oscar snubs?
Well, some of my top Oscar snubs are, I'll start with Alfred Hitchcock. The dude is considered one of the greatest directors of all time. He directed Rear Window, North by Northwest, Psycho, Vertigo, and he never won a Best Director Academy Award, which is a joke.
And going off that, I think one of yours, Matthews, is one of his films, which was, which one?
Psycho. Psycho was made in 1960 and is still hailed as one of the top horror films of all time, and it was not even nominated that year.
Yeah, that's actually pretty interesting. There was actually a movie out in 2012 called Hitchcock, which was based off of the filming of that movie, which was actually pretty good. I really enjoyed it quite a bit, and there's some things they talked about that I know has some controversy surrounding it, but it's a pretty good film, and it's interesting, I think, and it almost makes me wonder if that was kind of the essence of what that film is really all about, of going, this is a great film, and the Academy didn't have anything to say about it really at all. I mean, pretty iconic film.
Looking at the films that did get nominated that year, you had The Apartment, The Alamo, Elmer Gantry, Sons and Lovers, and The Sundowners. The last three of those are films, honestly, I've never even heard of, and I know a lot about movies. The Alamo was a John Wayne epic, and I know the Academy loves it, but actually the film that won that year was The Apartment, which is an excellent film by Billy Wilder, one of the better comedies to come out of the early 60s. But still, to not recognize the masterpiece that Psycho is, and the fact that if you were to ask someone on the street, someone's heard of Psycho, but no one's ever heard of The Apartment, it just feels honestly just like a travesty to not recognize a film that has just become, you know, such a classic in American film.
All right, Nate. Well, I know you had more on your list, so while that is definitely pretty much non-debatable, that's a great snub. What are some of the other ones you had, Nate?
I'll go more recent, and I'll talk about Saving Private Ryan losing to Shakespeare in Love for Best Picture in 1998. I mean, come on. And then the Shawshank Redemption losing Best Picture to Forrest Gump in 1994. Shawshank Redemption is, well, it's my favorite movie of all time, and it's considered by many to be one of the best movies of all time. And it is a perfect movie. Nothing is wrong with it. You can't change anything. And yet it loses to Forrest Gump.
It's hard to argue that. I mean, Forrest Gump is a great film, but I lean more toward you. I mean, Shawshank should have won that and didn't. Matthew, I know you have thoughts on this too. What do you think?
We all feel for the plight of Andy Dufresne. No. It was Shawshank was a definite snub. For me, I'm going to look in the 80s and actually just and also more recent. But in 1987, The Last Emperor won Best Picture, which Last Emperor was filmed by, I can't remember his name, an Italian director. And it was a great film chronicling the rise of communism in China. But the fact that in that same year, Brian De Palma's The Untouchables and Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket were both released, and neither of them were even nominated. Just feels shameful, because once again, those are films that have actually stood the test of time compared to other films nominated that year, like Broadcast News or Moonstruck or Hope and Glory, not things that are typically remembered as well, or more period pieces compared to The Untouchables, which is still one of the greatest thrillers to kind of look back on and love, and then Full Metal Jacket, which just basically was one of the final says on the Vietnam War. And then looking more recently, in 2011, yeah, just this last year, we had The Artist win Best Picture, which The Artist to me was complete schlock. It was, you know, it would have been cool if it had been made in the 1920s, but the problem is it was made today, and it just, I don't know, I didn't really get why people went crazy for it. While, you know, other films that were nominated that year, like Midnight in Paris and The Tree of Life, Midnight in Paris was Woody Allen's best film in 20-plus years, and at least his best comedy. And to see that not get any recognition, at least in terms of Best Picture, and The Tree of Life, which was Terrence Malick's masterpiece, even better than Days of Heaven or Thin Red Line, which are also really great films. To see those lose to me, what just felt like just schmaltz, I just really couldn't stand. And then other films that year, which I thought were even better than Midnight in Paris, Tree of Life, movies like Take Shelter and Melancholia also completely just snubbed. So let's just say 2011 was not a happy year for me in film.
Yeah, I mean, there's really a lot to talk about for that year. I mean, going back to, you know, The Tree of Life, even kind of like what you were talking about. We were talking about this before we recorded the podcast of going how much The Artist really didn't deserve that win. And there really was a lot of buzz about it when it came out. And there were some really good movies that were nominated with it that I really think should have been, you know, probably more in the buzz more than The Artist was. Nate, what did you think about that? I know that was, you had some thoughts on that as well.
I didn't really care for The Artist, even though I said I did earlier. Just trying to be different.
He
I did. But something I want to mention that we haven't yet is The Dark Knight getting snubbed for Best Picture in 2008. That movie getting snubbed led to the Academy adding more movies to the Best Picture category. So, I mean, that's probably might be considered one of the biggest snubs ever since it led to them changing things up.
Yeah, and while the snub itself is actually a really good one, it definitely deserved to be there. I loved how they decided to change because of it, though, especially with this year's nominees, which we'll talk about next week, a phenomenal list. I mean, they're really great. And even going to the 2010 class or the 11 awards were the King's Speech one. And I know that none of us really liked that win, but when you look at the list, you had 127 Hours, The Fighter, Inception, The Social Network, True Grit, a bunch of great movies that year. That was just a phenomenal list. And really, I think, you know, either The Inception, The Fighter, or even 127 Hours really probably should have been there. Or maybe even True Grit I loved better than The King's Speech. And I know this is something you have a lot, Matthew, too.
Yeah. 2010 in recent years was one of the best years in film of late. Pretty much almost every film nominated that year, except, honestly, Winter's Bone was a film I really liked. And then... you know, to see The King's Speech win out of that, yeah, I wasn't happy about it, but at least it was a good movie compared to when looking at, say, 2011's list, which some of them were good, and to look at The Artist, 2011 was a very depressed year in film, and honestly, 2012 has kind of been a mix, so I'm going to be very curious to see what's happening this year.
A couple of things that I had on my list, and I wanted to talk about this now since we're not really going to get to talk about it next week a whole lot, is actually this last year with Cloud Atlas. Cloud Atlas was not on, was not really recognized hardly at all, and the score for this film was phenomenal. It was amazing. It had three different directors in it, one of them which was even the composer, one of the composers for it as well. It's just amazing. If you haven't had a chance to go and listen to this soundtrack and to the score, go do it. It is really, really well done. And I know this is something we had to talk about too. Did you guys have any thoughts on Cloud Atlas?
Yeah, I loved Cloud Atlas. I read the book, and while the book is structured way different than the movie, I still enjoyed the movie a lot. And like JD was saying, the score is fantastic. I mean, I think this score will be used for movie trailers for years. I mean, it's that good.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And you can actually go and listen to it on Spotify. And if you get a chance, go and do it. It's a phenomenal score. It's really, really well done. One other thing that I wanted to ask you guys with Oscar snubs is earlier this week I was reading this article that was kind of relating to this, and there was some names that were popped up on this list of actors and actresses that have never been nominated, which I kind of want to ask you guys about. One of the guys on the list that I thought would have at least been nominated was John Turturro. He's really recognized as he's a pretty well-known actor, and a lot of people love him. And he was actually on this article that I was reading was the number one guy surprised that they had on as far as the guys that has never been nominated, which I thought was kind of interesting. Is there any actresses or actors that you guys think that that should at least be more recognized?
I'm honestly sure there are, but I really don't have anything to say here, so I'm going to pass the mic on.
Okay, well, apparently these guys didn't do their homework, so that's fine. It's pretty interesting on the other side of that. You know, Meryl Streep has been nominated dozens and dozens of times and has only won twice, which is quite, you know, it's pretty interesting. So, and I know it's something Nate and I were talking about the other day of, you know, I don't know which one's necessarily worse, to be nominated a million times and then never win or to never be nominated. But I guess being nominated is always fun. So as far as other Oscar snubs, one that's personal to me, and this isn't something that's necessarily going to be, you know, highly touted or anything, but was the original Transformers in terms of visual effects. I thought was kind of, kind of screwed out of should have been winning. They lost to the Golden Compass back in 2007, which I thought was kind of a joke. I thought they also should have won for sound mixing and sound editing too, which they didn't also. And the score by Steve Jablonski is actually one of my favorites of all time. So before we move on to our last segment, is there any other Oscar snubs that you guys wanted to get out there?
Yeah, I'd just like to say for this year, Skyfall actually is one that I was very sad to not see get recognized. It felt like with the expansion of, from 5 to 10 3 years ago, that this was a way to recognize the more popular films. So it's not just the art house or epic films that are getting nominated that, it was made to make rooms for movies like The Dark Knight or now like Skyfall. Skyfall was the perfection of the Bond film on so many levels. And to see it actually just not get any recognition this year was just seriously uncool.
And there were a couple of big directors who got snubbed this year. You have Ben Affleck for Argo. He's been racking up the awards and he doesn't even get nominated for an Oscar. Catherine Bigelow for Zero Dark Thirty. And then Quentin Tarantino for Django Unchained. Those are some three big-time directors who made some of the year's best movies, and they don't even get nominated.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And we'll talk a little bit more about this next week, but it's going to be real interesting to see how they vote for best film when Argo has been winning everything. And so has Ben Affleck. And then at the same time, he never gets nominated for the Oscar, which is going to be real interesting to see how that sways any of the voting, if it does at all. And with Lincoln getting so many nominations for pretty much everything, you almost wonder if that's going to be the favorite and the front runner right now to win Best Film, which, should be interesting. It's definitely an interesting debate, and we'll talk a little bit more about it next week, but There's really a lot of snubs. I feel like this is something we could talk about forever, but we're kind of running out of time. So before we get out of here, though, I wanted to kind of just discuss a little bit of the films we saw this week. I just wanted to see what you guys saw, what you think, what you liked, what you didn't like, and then we'll call it a show. So what did you guys see this week?
I want an animated film kick, all the ones that were nominated for Oscars, except Wreck-It Ralph. Not seen that yet. But I saw Frankenweenie, Paranorman, and The Pirates, Band of Misfits. Paranorman was very fun, a much more accessible film than Coraline, and very much enjoyed it. Frankenweenie really kind of won my heart over just because of all the horror movie references in it. And albeit I'm never the biggest Tim Burton fan, it was one that I just... It's like I would have actually showed my kids at least the first 45 minutes, maybe not the latter half. It had a heart to it, and I really appreciated that. And then there was The Pirates, Band of Misfits, which from trailers looks like a terrible kids movie. But when I did my research and kind of realized, at least I believe this is correct, is from the same studio that brought Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit, I thought, I trust the Brits, and decided to watch it. All I will say is that any film that can describe a beard as luxuriant has my vote.
Well, I kind of slacked off with my movie watching for the week. Other than the new Die Hard, the only thing I watched was Warm Bodies. And I actually really enjoyed Warm Bodies. But you'll have to go to our website to check out the full...
Yeah, I watched a lot of movies this week. I'm like on the polar opposite spectrum of Nate. I saw Die Hard, or the new Die Hard, with you guys, Good Day to Die Hard, which we talked about earlier in the show. I also saw Safe Haven. It was my Valentine's date with my girlfriend, which I enjoyed. The full review of that is also up on the website at incessionfilm.com. Definitely not even close to the best movie for a movie based off of a Nicholas Sparks book, but it was. But I love chick flicks. I enjoy them quite a bit. So judge me if you want to, but I enjoy them. So I also saw Wreck-It Ralph again this week, which is a really great movie. It's one we'll talk about definitely next week for sure. I really enjoyed it. You should definitely go watch it if you haven't seen it yet. I also rewatched The Impossible this week, as that one is coming out on Blu-ray here pretty soon. But pretty good film. I really enjoyed that one quite a bit. Also, I also watched The Master, as that one I thought was a little overhyped and a little overrated, but it was still a pretty good film, and I really enjoyed it quite a bit. And I think that's it. I don't think I'm missing anything. Oh, I watched Beasts of the Southern Wild last night, so, and I loved that film. Absolutely loved it. So it was very, very good stuff. So before we get out of here, any other thoughts from you guys at all?
I'm just very much looking forward to see what the Academy is going to do this year. A lot I can predict, but honestly, when it comes down to that Best Picture category, I'm plugging for Beasts of the Southern Wild. But to see that it really is kind of anyone's game right now, so I'm really getting hyped for it.
I agree with you. I mean, I really enjoyed it. We'll have our full Oscar predictions next week on the podcast, and we'll actually be starting tomorrow. We're going to be doing our Oscar reviews on the website for the best films, and probably a few others. I'll probably throw up a review for Wreck-It Ralph and some of the other animated ones as well. So you can look for those up on the website coming up this next week at InSessionFilm.com. Nate, did you have any final thoughts or anything? No, he's just nervous for his Michigan State Spartans this week, so I think that's what he's thinking about right now. So be sure to, be sure to check us out on the website, InSessionFilm.com. Follow us on Twitter, at InSessionFilm. Also, go to our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and search InSessionFilm. Also, be sure to follow us personally on Twitter. Nate is on Twitter at Nader_Parsons. Matthew is on Twitter at MasonKnight_42, and then you can follow me at JD_PHXBLUE. Again, this podcast is brought to you by Phoenix Blue Marketing and Advertising. Be sure to check them out on their website, phoenixblue.com. And that is it for our first show. Nice job, guys. We thought it went really well. We did a good job. So this will hopefully be up on the website either later tonight or tomorrow. And then we'll, like I said in the video on the website, we are going to be doing this weekly. So we'll be bringing you weekly reviews, news, and trailers, and all kinds of fun stuff. So next week, we'll be doing entirely the Oscars, and we'll give Oscar predictions and doing lots of Oscar talk. So so no review next week. We'll have, like I said, we'll do have the reviews up on the website. But till then... for Nate Parsons, Matthew Mason, I am JD Duran, and everyone have a wonderful, wonderful week, and we'll see you in sessionfilm.com.